Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, it's William Keys, Real Talk 155. I know it's been a little bit since we got on for a show. The summers are usually more busy than the rest of the year. I know last summer was similar. We didn't get on as much. But, you know, it is what it is. There's a lot of stuff. I'm glad, you know, there's a lot of stuff for us to talk about tonight. I'm glad we're back on. You know, we just had UFC 253, you know, the first card back on Fight Island. You know, that was headlined by Israel Adesanya versus Paulo Costa for the middleweight title. Of course, Israel Adesanya, well, we saw Israel Adesanya defended his belt. He had a second round, I believe it was a TKO, second round TKO over Paulo Costa in what was pretty much a very one-sided fight, if you ask me. That was a very one-sided fight. Well, I think that's the general consensus, but yeah, if you ask me, that was a one-sided fight. But at the same time, it was like, you know, I predicted that fight. You know, me and Lee both said, you know, I'm pretty sure we both predicted a dominant performance from Israel Adesanya. I just felt like the whole time, you know, regardless of the mental aspect, you know, and regardless of, you know, I usually talk about mental warfare on this show, regardless of that, you know, just as fighters, I feel like, you know, I'm no expert, but just at, you know, just at fighting, I feel like Israel Adesanya is just, he's so much more experienced if you just look at the track record. I mean, Israel Adesanya, you know, that fight, I think that was either his hunt that made, that marked his 100th fight or that broke 100 fights for him, but I mean, compared to Paulo Costa, I don't even think he has, you know, any other background. I, you know, he has, he might be like a, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and then he has his 13 MMA fights. But, you know, five of those were wins in the UFC. But, much less experienced guy. I mean, just even at that, you know, Israel had, I want to say, 8 fights in the UFC, plus somewhere between like 70 and I think it's 70 and 80 or maybe even 90 kickboxing fights. And I think he, you know, so it's just from the beginning, I think we both, you know, you could see that it was that fight was a big mismatch. And I think a lot of it was just, you know, to the casual fan, it looked good because you have, oh, here's this, you know, more muscular, you know, this bigger muscular guy versus the skinny guy. So we need to see this fight. But, you know, in reality, when you know the guys that are in there, you know, you actually knew that Adesanya was like, you know, light years ahead of Paulo Costa in terms of actual skill and striking. You know, people think Paulo Costa, you know, he's advertised as a knockout artist. He's not a knockout artist. You know, he kind of takes his time, you know, putting guys away and, but anyways, you know, Lee is here, so obviously you could hear what I'm talking about. I'm just recapping the main event from Saturday.
Yo, yeah, it was, is he just outclassed, man? I just didn't understand what Costa's, what his game plan was. It just seemed like he went in there, like, I'm going to get this guy out of here, but he didn't have a rhyme or reason on how he was going to get him out of there. But, you know, Izzy definitely made him look bad. I really don't see nobody basically in that weight class that can really get him a fight right now. He already beat Whitaker. People saying Darren Till. I don't know about Darren Till. I like Cannoneer, but he seems like a striker to me. Anybody that doesn't have at least a well-rounded game plan is not going to be Izzy. You have to be able to do a little bit of bulk of everything in the octagon to give yourself a chance to win. If you're a one-trick pony, you're not going to beat him.
Well, you see, the way I'm looking at it is, I honestly feel like the two guys who have the best chance of beating Adesanya, and I just kind of scanned through the division in my head. I think Whitaker and Cannonier are going to fight. A lot of people figure Cannonier is going to beat Whitaker, and then Izzy already called out Cannonier, so if he beats Whitaker, then that already sets up that fight. And Izzy said he wants to fight once more before the end of the year. So if Cannonier wins there, they might have a quick turnaround fight in late December for that end of the year card. They'll probably main event that. But I actually expect Whitaker to beat Cannonier, and I think they're gonna Izzy and Whitaker are gonna, because people are forgetting that Whitaker is a wrestler too, and he could easily take Cannonier down. I mean, he could strike, he can box with him too, but don't think he's not. Look at the game plan he used in the Darren Till fight. That was a beautiful game plan. He mixed his takedowns with his boxing. That was a beautiful game plan, and that's the kind of thing that I think Whitaker and Gastelum are the two guys I think that, I'm not saying they will, but I'm saying that could beat Izzy in the division right now. I think those are the two guys. If I had to pick anybody, it'd be one of those two guys I think will be the ones to beat him, because they both have a wrestling background. And we saw how Gastelum, just with his size, which we don't even really know what it was. I mean, it's kind of hard to pinpoint what it was, but he's a lot shorter than Adesanya, and it just seemed like his height and his size somehow in their fight was able to. Adesanya looked really puzzled in there. He looked really like he was fighting, but it seemed like he couldn't figure out Gastelum, and from it, they ended up having what I think is one of the best UFC fights that is debatably the best. That might be the best UFC fight I've ever seen. Adesanya versus Gastelum. That might be the best one. If not, it's in my top five, maybe even top three. But I think Gastelum has the wrestling pedigree. He could take him down. I think Gastelum and Whitaker are the two guys. Cannonier and Hermanson are both good guys, but I think they're just going to go in there and try to stand. I think they're going to try to outbox, and they're going to think
that doesn't work.
And I think Cannonier is going to expect, that story is going to be there when they fight. If he does beat Whitaker, which I don't think he's going to, but if he does, which it could happen, the story is going to be, Cannonier's power, and they're going to say how he was at heavyweight and he's moving down to fight a middleweight. And how that's going to be. So the UFC loves to sell these guys who have a lot of power and, advertises, he gets knockouts left and right. And Cannonier is very powerful, but it's going to take a lot more than a guy with power to beat Israel Adesanya. That's just, you got to know that, because this kid is not just, a flash in the pan. This kid's, he's good. He's real good. And it's going to take a lot more than a guy like that to beat him. You know what I mean? Because Adesanya's too smart. He's going to look at that. I'm sure him and his team watch a lot of tape. He's going to look at that. He's going to look at Cannonier. He's going to see the holes in his game. He's going to be kicking his legs off just like he did to Costa. He was effective with the leg kicks. I'm sure he's going to use that again. Why not do it? Take the legs out from these guys, and then next thing, Costa looked like he could barely move. Towards the end, in the second half of that first round, his legs were so beat up, it looked like he could barely move anymore. And that's what happens to guys. They don't check the leg kicks, and they're just standing there getting their legs kicked out. So it's gonna take a special type of fighter to beat him. I think Whitaker's gonna win, and you're gonna have a rematch. And I think it's either that one or it's the Gastelum rematch that, will be the ones either one of those two are the ones. I don't think these other guys can beat him.
Only thing I worry about with Whitaker, though, is he actually was doing it in a Darren Till fight also. If his punches have become really wild and wide, when your punches are wild and wide, you are easily countered. And that's what happened to him when he fought Izzy the first time. He was throwing his punches, you know, wild and wide, and he got caught. And I had noticed that in the first round of the fight because I had – I think I either texted you or I tweeted it out that Whitaker was being too wild and wild with his punches, leaving himself open. And I think two rounds later he got finished. And I noticed that in the Till fight he was still doing the same thing. He needs to sharpen up his punches, shorten them up, sharpen them up, so that throw them, you can fall back into a defensive posture. When you throw your punches wild and wide, you can't protect yourself. Being that he's a righty, basically when he throw a wild and a wide punch from the right side, basically the right side of his face is wide open for a split second for him to get punched or kicked. So he needs to sharpen that up. And I'm with you. Somebody has to make Izzy fight off of his back. We have never seen him get wrestled, where he has to continuously carry somebody weight and continuously work himself back to his feet. Until somebody do that, then this game plan of going in there and you're going to circle to the left away from his right hand, or you're going to smother him and be at close distance, that's not going to work because of his kickboxing background. He's going to keep you at distance. So until somebody do something to make him uncomfortable in the octagon, he's going to be sky high in confidence going into every fight. And Whitaker, like I said, he just needs to sharpen up his striking prior to, you know, he needs to get back to the striker he was prior to the Izzy fight, where he was sharp, crisp, and he was still playing defense. Cannoneer, I think he has a chin. I think, you know, he's kind of short for that division. But can he handle the leg kicks? Can he handle the jab? Will he be able to adjust his game plan in the octagon during the fight? So I want to see him against Whitaker, see him in probably some kind of adverse condition where he has to do something to change up his game plan to get himself out of trouble. So I want to see that out of him. Because 9 times out of 10, when you fight the champ, your plan A isn't going to work. So you have to be able to revert to a plan B and maybe even a plan C. And me and you have talked about that numerous occasions. You just can't come in the octagon with just one plan of attack. If you come in with one plan of attack, you done lost the fight walking to the octagon.
And we've been seeing guys like that. You know, we've been seeing that story for the longest time. I mean, for Cannoneer to come in, it's interesting that guys still think that they can just knock out the champ and that's going to be the way they win. It's interesting that guys still, you know, come in with that mentality because, you know, how many times have you seen that story and that, you know, scary guy just gets dominated by a more well-rounded fighter? I mean, you could think of, you know, Rumble Johnson in D.C. Pretty much that happened both times. You could think about, you know, Francis Ngannou and Stipe Miocic. That happened. You know, 5 rounds domination. Stipe, more well-rounded fighter. Same story. They came in. They said he hit harder than a Ford Escape. You know, traveling at like 68 miles per hour or whatever that was. And what did those punches do for him? Pretty much nothing. And at that fact, I y'all know I love to bring this up, but I was at TD Garden and watched it live, and my favorite part was I saw some of those punches connect, and Ngannou actually landed. People make it seem like he didn't land, and Ngannou landed some punches on Stipe. He landed some good shots, but it didn't put him down. And that's the thing that nobody likes to acknowledge about that fight. But that's another story. What I'm just trying to say is that there's all those instances with guys like that, and it's interesting that history repeats itself with a more well-rounded guy has dominated that scary knockout artist every time. But yet these guys still come in with that mentality like, oh, I'm going to beat this, you know, once-in-a-lifetime talent or once-in-a-generation talent with just a good right hand or a good left hand. You know what I mean? And that's the thing. That's a lot of guys' downfall. And you said that many times before on this show. A lot of guys, they're too one-dimensional, and you can't do that versus guys that are, you know, three, four, fifth-dimensional. Izzy striking is too complex. You know what I mean? He does too many things. And Cannonier, you know, Whitaker, he does swing wildly. You know, he swung very wildly versus Adesanya. I was confused about where those, you know, where those left and right hooks were, where that was coming from. The way he was, it was like the amount that he left his chin exposed was so weird to me. It was so strange to me the way he was throwing those shots and leaving his chin exposed. You know, it was like every time he did it, you know, there he was exposed again. You know, and Israel being such a great counter striker, you know, he can see that the first time you do it. It's just a matter of time before he catches you at the right opportunity and he counters. And that was, you know, when you watch the footage back, that was what happened. He caught Whitaker right after one of his shots. And that was a perfect counter that put Whitaker down. And he was able to finish the fight. So I don't really know where that came about with Whitaker, because I never saw that in his, you know, in his other fights. I never saw that in his two Romero fights, and him swinging wildly like that and recklessly like that. So I don't really know where he picked that up in his preparation. But I'm with you that he needs to stop doing that, because it's reckless and it's dangerous, and you're only gonna get caught, you know, fighting like that, especially if he fights like that versus Cannonier. Then he'll lose, because standing in the pocket with Cannonier and swing wildly like that, you know, he might not be as good of a striker as Adesanya, but he still has heavy hands, and he can still put him away if he's going to fight recklessly like that. You got to stop doing that.
Yeah, man. And I was sitting here thinking while you was talking, I don't remember him being this wild against Romero or Jacare, because I think both of them would have exposed him for fighting like that. But I want to say it was Ringworth, but I can't say that because he did the same thing against Darren Till. He fought the same way against Darren Till. So he'll definitely have to sharpen that up, because like you said, if he do that against Cannonier, he's going to get put to sleep, or he's going to get touched up on. But I look for Whitaker against Cannonier to make it more of a grappling / wrestling match. Although I think Cannonier is he's comfortable with wrestling and going to the ground. So I think that fight is going to be action-packed. I think it's going to be action field. I think both guys gonna be going for the finish, because both of them know that the winner's gonna get a title shot, and I like when guys know that, because then they come in there fighting with a purpose. You know, when they know that the winner's gonna get a title shot, you'll see them going balls to the wall, and I like that. So, but looking at the division, like you said, man, I mean, Hermanson was out there talking trash, talking about, you know, if I get a shot at Adesanya, you know, I'm going to test him fighting off his back and all that. But the thing is, you got to get in close enough to take him down. What's your game plan to take him down? You just going to come out shooting every time? If you come out shooting every time, you're susceptible to a knee. So what is your game plan to take him down? But I know I done said it. It would be interesting if we could see him on his back. How would he adjust to that? and does he have a game plan of getting back to his feet? But right now, man, Izzy is just I know when he popped on the scene, man, you talked about him being a fighter of the year, that first year that he popped on the scene because he was so impressive. And, you know, man, he lived up to the hype. So, hey, caps off to him. Now we just got to, you know, we got to find somebody to give him a fight now.
Oh, yeah. You know, I definitely think he lived up to the hype. And it's interesting because I remember when he was the first time I ever caught wind of him, and right when I saw that he was headlining this card, I saw that he was headlining the card, and then I think the UFC had a preview for it, like, on their channel, and I watched some of his training footage, or maybe they posted one of his previous fights or something, and I watched some of his footage, and when I saw him, man, I thought it right away. I was like, yo, this kid's going to be unbelievable. Like, and I remember when he first came out, everybody was saying this kid looks like, you know, all the casuals were saying this kid looks like a morph between John Jones and Anderson Silva. They said he's like half John Jones, half Anderson Silva. That's what everybody was saying about him. You know, in his first early UFC fights, you know, he fought Wilkinson in his early fight. Then he had the Brad Tavares fight shortly after that at I think it was the Tough Finale, and that was the first fight where I caught wind of him when I saw it was Tavares versus Adesanya on the main event of the Tough Finale, and I was like, man, they're putting him against. I mean, Brad Tavares, we know, is kind of like one of those. He's not really a guy who has, I mean, in my opinion, he's not a great fighter. He's one of those guys who you put in there, and if you're going to have a rising star like that.
Basically, he's not an easy win. He's going to make you fight. He's going to make you earn it.
Right, and that's, you know what I mean? But that's a guy, too, that, you know, you look at it, and it's like, you know, if you do beat him, you can start your resume with that. If you do beat him, that's a good starting place for your resume, and I feel like that's what Adesanya had. He was able to grasp that and have that was pretty much his first win on his resume of you know, of a name that people actually know. You know, when you look at the guys he fought in UFC, the first couple guys, you know, people, you know, I'm not even as familiar with. You know, that was the first fight where I caught wind and said, okay, Brad Tavares, he's fighting a guy that I know. Okay, so now I can. I'm gonna tune into this. I'm gonna take a look. Now I didn't end up watching the fight, but I know, and I think I think Adesanya, you know, took a unanimous decision that night, and from there I was like, you know, I just was like, this kid's gonna be great. He's gonna beat everybody. I didn't think he was gonna do it that fast. That was the thing that really blew me away. We were on here talking about he's gonna be the fighter of the year because after that we might not have known at that time that he was going to fight that many times the same year. He fought like 5 times, I think, in that 1 year. And it was like every 2-3 months he was fighting again and he was dominating. It was absolutely mad. And it was like, he was easily he was easily the fighter of the year. I think that was, it was 2018. I just didn't think he was going to do it that fast. I think he went 4-0 or 5-0 for that year. Maybe it was 4-0. But anyway, still, 4 times in a year is more than like 95% of guys are fighting. So that was definitely impressive. And then he went from basically right there to fighting Anderson Silva at the top of the following year. And then once he beat Anderson Silva, that was, you know, that was an enjoyable fight, for at least I thought, you know, to watch. And after that, he fought for the interim title. It was so crazy. It was like, this guy just whipped through 5 or 6 fights and is already fighting for the interim title. It was slightly, he was in the UFC for, I want to say 1 year. 1 year, give or take, and he was already in a championship fight. Like, that run was crazy. That was absolutely crazy.
But we got to, the reason he was in the championship fight is because Whitaker couldn't stay healthy. Whitaker seemed like, because what we were saying, Whitaker had, every fight he had it was either getting canceled or he was injured. What it seemed like it was about 18 months to 2 years. Didn't it seem like that we was waiting on him to fight? So, you know, I kind of applaud the UFC for, because what, the Gastelum and Adesanya fight was for the interim belt, right? And then he ended up
Yeah, because
but,
Whittaker,
you know, man,
go ahead.
But you know, the UFC, they saw the same thing in Adesanya that I noticed him after his second fight. You know, I was like, well, anybody can come in and, you know, in their first fight, you know, do what he did and, you know, look impressive. But let me see what you look like in your second fight. After his second fight, I was like, yeah, this kid is the real deal. But the UFC saw it too, because they didn't give him no cupcakes. They gave Brad Tavares, and then his competition kept getting stiffer and stiffer until he got that the title shot against the intro title shot against Gastelum. So, you know, and I think if he would have maybe lost, maybe his third fight, he probably would have got the Yair Rodriguez treatment. Probably have him fight a lesser guy to build him back up. But, you know, he kept on passing the test. And, hey, I see him doing what John did, man. I see him dominating this division and then possibly moving up to 205 and maybe even dominating 205. DC said it the other day to Ariel Helwani, and everything DC says now, I look at, I probably need to stop looking at it this way, but he was like, yeah, Adesanya is the best 205 in the world right now. I'm sitting here like, damn, that's shade already. I was like, but then I got to thinking, I was like, John is a heavyweight now, so he really might not be throwing shade. But, you know, take your time, Izzy. Take your time. Clean out your division and then go big fish hunting. Big game hunting, I'm sorry. You know, he's still young.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is too is that I lose my train of thought here. The thing is too about Adesanya is that I think and this will probably be my last thought on this, because there's something else I want to jump into. And I know you. I need to hear your thoughts on this next. But you know, my last thought on this is that one of the biggest criticisms that guys had about him, he has answered that criticism. He's still answering it now. Is that when he came in, even though you said that his competition kept getting stiffer, guys like us saw that. But at the same time, there was another audience of people. And I can understand where they're coming from in a way. And there was another audience of people who said, look at how this kid was able to come into the middleweight division and fight around all of the most dangerous guys. They said he fought his way around all the most dangerous fights and then still got to the title without having to address the most dangerous guys. The guys that they named was, they said, you know, how does he get around Costa? How does he get around Yoel Romero? How does he get around Jacare? Now, what I respect about him is that he may have not had to fight them, but he didn't shy away from fighting them once he got to the belt. You know, he basically called out Yoel Romero right after, you know, he was going to fight Costa, and then Costa got hurt. So he said, I'll fight Romero. He fought Romero. We all know the fight was terrible, but he still fought him.
Oh my God.
And yeah, that fight was terrible. I mean, but a big part of the blame is on Romero. He really didn't attack. You know, the champion doesn't really have to rush at you. So I blame Romero for more of that than I blame Adesanya. But either way, he fought him, and then he didn't shy away. He fought Costa. And I'm sure if Jacare was actually in title contention right now, which I don't think he is, I know he wouldn't shy away from a fight with Jacare. So I respect him more for doing that. You know, he pretty much answered, not because they said it, but because he wanted to. He went back and made his rounds to fight all the you know, the scariest guys at 185, and he's you know, he's making his way through all those names now. So that's what I respect about that.
Yeah, man, you got to tip your hat off to him. Once he won the belt, everybody, they said that he didn't fight to get there. He was like, yo, bring him on. Line him up, bring him on. Yeah, when he first won the fight, when he first won the belt, he was like, all right, Costa, where you at? He called him out. And he was like, you next. And then when Costa fell out, he was like, hey, give me the next guy in line, which is Yoel Romero. So, yeah, man, he about that work right now, and he want the smoke. So, hey, you got to respect the champion like that. Yeah, I mean, you like when Bisping won, he wanted to get a revenge fight against Dan Henderson. Dan Henderson wasn't even ranked. It's like, for real, dog? What's this about? So, you know, man, it's I respect the kid, man.
So, now, I got to get to this. Something I want to ask you about is the co-main event you had. You know, for your boy John Jones's vacant light heavyweight title, you had, you know, one of Lee's favorite fighters in the UFC, Dominic Reyes, right? You had his favorite, Dominic Reyes, was fighting Jan Blachowicz, who's actually our boy nowadays, and we knew, you know, we were some of the few people who said how, you know, he was winning the fight versus Thiago Santos. You know, before he just randomly changed his game plan and kind of sabotaged himself to lose the fight. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. But you had them, you had those two guys square off for the title, and Blachowicz won the fight, and he basically, I'll put it this way, he basically destroyed Reyes. He obliterated Reyes, and it was a beautiful display from Blachowicz. The way he broke him down, it was like a pure boxing fight. Now, I'm not going to do this because the point is I'm asking you. Now, I'm going to ask you because I have a feeling you watched that fight closely. Am I wrong? Did you not watch that fight closely?
Very close.
Okay, so now I'm going to ask you this. Reyes versus Blachowicz, what did you see in that fight? What happened in that fight?
For me, it goes back to when me and you was talking and we made our predictions. When Blachowicz, when he sticks to his game plan and he doesn't rush, he is almost impossible to beat because he's not going to make any mistakes. He's going to make you make the mistake. And what did Reyes do? Come in overconfident. What did he do inside the octagon? Very overconfident. He made a mistake. He came in as if he was the champ. You got the champ, bro. You didn't have no belt on your shoulder walking to the octagon. And we talked about the Santos fight, which Jan lost because he frayed from his game plan. And I know when he go back, and he look at that fight against Santos, that's probably the guy he wants to fight next because he want to right that wrong, and I don't blame him. So I just think Jan is a more technical fighter, man, that we give him credit for.
I don't think you missed anything. You know, the only thing that I wanted to bring up is in the ending sequence of that fight, it was pretty much like you said, Reyes came in and the way that he was moving around the octagon, it seemed like he looked very, very confident in what he was doing in that fight, and he seemed like, I just got the sense of it that when I was watching him, I was like, this guy looks like he feels invincible. This guy looks like he feels invincible in there, and I could just sense it. I was like, he doesn't think Bukovic is going to catch him. He doesn't think Bukovic is going to catch him eventually. And Bukovic was just walking him down. And Reyes was kind of just bouncing around the octagon. He was moving. He, you know, his footwork was pretty decent. He just kept a quick pace. But Bukovic just kept on finding him, kept on tagging him here and there. And the ending sequence of the fight, I want to say Bukovic caught him with a shot off his nose. And I think he cut Reyes. And I don't know if his eye was bleeding or he caught him off the nose and his nose was bleeding. But once I saw that shot land, I was like, this is it. Like, Reyes is done. Because right there, I think he was already rocked. And he was already halfway out the gate in that once that shot landed. Once I seen the blood gushing from his nose, I said, this is the beginning of the end for Reyes. And I think it was about, you know, 10, 15 seconds later, Bukovic landed a couple follow-up shots and Reyes went down. And I said, you know, it was surgical. What Bukovic did, it was surgical.
If you would have closed your eyes and you didn't know that Bukovic was Bukovic, I mean, if you didn't know Reyes was Reyes, you would have thought Reyes was Johnny Walker. When Johnny Walker was on that win streak, the way he was acting and shit in the octagon, you know, how cocky he was. That's how Reyes looked to me on Saturday, man. And for him to come in like that and to fight like that, I got to see how he look in his next fight. Maybe he's not as good as we thought he was. If he come out in his next fight and he gets dominated again, that makes John Jones look really, really bad. It will make John look really, really bad that he didn't finish that guy or that he made that fight more competitive than what it was. But we're not going to take no shine from Jan because Jan is what we said he was. Me and you both predicted him to go in there and win the fight. I thought he would win by unanimous decision, but he didn't let it go to the scorecards. He finished his business, and he did it in a dominating fashion. And I think if Santos wins his next fight, we get Bukovic and Santos too. And I think he rights the wrong, and he avenges that loss against Santos. And we won't even need a trilogy fight because Jan is going to dominate him so bad that we'll be like, yeah, that first fight was a fluke.
Oh, you saying if him and Santos rematch?
Yep.
And I actually, just for the record, I just had to go back and see what our picks were. I actually picked Jan by KO-TKO. So I was on point. I was wrong about Adesanya. I said unanimous decision, but I was right about Jan. So, hey, man, I'm telling you, he's the true underdog of the UFC. He's the underdog every single fight, and he'll probably be even the underdog in his next fight. If he fights Santos, I bet you he still comes in as the underdog. That's what Bukovic does. He comes in as the underdog. He doesn't need to be the favorite. Everybody doesn't know him. He's a lesser-known guy, so they count him out every time, and he doesn't say a lot of, you know, he doesn't make all these remarks, and he's not super flashy, so they count him out, you know, and they don't think, you know, he's one of the quieter guys. They don't think, you know, he has any thunder in his hands, but he does, and he knocks out guys left and right, and each one of them that doubts him. You know, let me have a caller into the call real quick. Yo, Evan, is that you?
Yo, how's it going?
Hey, we were just talking about Bukovic and Reyes. What did you see in that fight on Saturday night?
You know, I felt like Reyes at the press conference, and prior to that, like in one of like the media days, he was just exhausted. He looked so tired, and I think he was that way in the fight. I think he was just the time difference, I think, messed with him, and I don't think he just could get into the fight, you know, kind of like how Woodley just hasn't been able to kind of wake himself up, wake that beast up. And he just seemed just off, just slow, even he admitted he couldn't pull the trigger. And, you know, and but Jan was clean. Jan was clean. Those body kicks, those like the forward lunging combo that he landed a few times, that was clean. But regardless of all that, Lee, I hear you saying that Jan is going to dominate Santos, and we got to stop that talk right now, because Santos is coming, and he's going to take that belt. He's going to slap Glover, and he's going to take that belt from Jan in the rematch.
Did you see the first fight?
I saw the first fight. What happened?
So what did you
Santos
think of the first
knocked
fight?
Him out.
But why did he knock him out?
Because Jan went at him and
And up to that point, who was winning the fight?
Honestly, I'd have to go
back
and watch. Honestly, I'd have to go back and watch. Cause...
Well, I'm going to save you some time. You ain't got to go back and watch it. Jan was winning the fight.
Of course he was.
Okay.
I
Keys, who was winning that fight, Keys?
Man, Bukovic was dominating that fight. He was way up on the scorecards. He had Santos looking like he was lost in there. Santos looked like he was shadowboxing.
It's all good.
And the reason he had Santos shook was because of his deliberate style. He wasn't rushing anything. It was like he was fighting at like a slow pace, but it was the right pace to fight against Santos.
Yeah.
But hey, Santos caught him because Jan did something that was very uncharacteristic to me, because he was doing everything right, and then he decided he gonna rush Santos and got caught. But I think Santos better not overlook Glover. Glover's been on a tear here lately, so if Santos overlooks Glover, Glover will put them hands on him. But I want to see
definitely.
Santos versus Jan. I don't want to see Jan versus Glover.
Nah, not at all.
I mean,
yeah,
I would say Glover, but I'd rather see Santos.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people would want to see that rematch. I think even the UFC would want to book the rematch more than they'd want to have, you know, Bukovic versus Teixeira. He's up there. He's up there. We've been watching Teixeira fight for a long time, so I think a lot of people would want to, you know, we want to see the more fresher guys and more fresher names. You know, Santos is still even new in the division, so he really only has like I think 4 fights. You know, see, he's still, to me, he's still, you know, a new name in the division. So I think, you know, for people generally, they want to see, you know, the more fresher guys fight. Evan, you missed it. We were talking about all the middleweights a little bit earlier. You know, we can't go back into it now because we'll get too deep into that. And there's something else I want to bring up here, but you did miss it. We were talking about Whitaker and Cannon there earlier.
Say again? I'm sorry.
I was just saying, you missed it. We were talking.
Go ahead.
We were talking about Whitaker and Cannon there earlier. I was just saying you missed it. We were talking about that.
Yeah, I can't believe I missed that one. I had to take a ride with my friend. But, no, that's a good one. You know, quick prediction. I got Cannon here, but I won't get too deep into it.
Why?
Everyone says it. He's the dark horse, and it's obviously true. He's the guy that came from heavyweight to light heavyweight to now clean shredded middleweight. And, you know, he's got the 3 knockouts. You know, he put out David Branch. He stopped Anderson Silva. And then he, you know, put the beat down on Hermanson when Hermanson was supposed to be the guy that was getting the title shot next. You know, he got the main event spot. He looked great, but Cannonier came in and just uncorked that shot. And I think that heavyweight, light heavyweight power is coming down with him at 185. And against Whitaker, who's coming up from 170, I just think the power difference is going to be severe. Granted, Whitaker, you know, is clearly a more well-rounded fighter. You know, he can mix in the takedowns. You know, he obviously championship mentality, but I got to go Cannonier, and I think it's going to be ugly. I think he's going to beat Whittaker bad.
Damn.
Okay. All right. All right. I like it. You sound very confident.
I got all confidence in Jared. I've had confidence ever since he beat when he beat Jack. I wish he got the title shot, but they screwed him over because he wasn't marketable yet. He didn't have a big enough name, so they went with like Romero, and look how that went.
I think the UFC has to stop using that as a reason for not giving guys and girls fights, saying that they're not marketable. That's why you put them in the co-main event. You don't have to put them in the main event.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, you can have a Cannonier fighting a co-main event, and then you have maybe, you know, another champion fight in the main event. So, I mean, it's ways around that to do right by a fighter. So, it is what it is.
Do you guys mind if I ask a question?
Go ahead.
So,
you said a few
I don't
questions?
Know if you guys talked about a quick question. I don't know if you guys talked about this on your show before, but I was in a Twitter conversation with someone the other day, and we were talking about how if about 5-round co-main events that are not for titles. Like, for example, the Whittaker-Cannonier fight is clearly the number one contender fight, and it's going to be a co-main, which is only 3 rounds. Do you think if fights that are clearly going to be number one contender fights, should they be 5 rounds, or should they just stick to the 3 if there's no title?
Go ahead, Keys. I'm with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know. I don't even need to elaborate. It's easy for me. I could get down with that 5 rounds for, you know, title eliminator fights. Definitely.
I'm with it, too, because basically your next fight is going to be a 5-round fight. The winner's next fight is going to be a 5-round fight. So why not go ahead and do a 5-round fight to get there? So
that's what I always said, because –
And also, you get the fans more bang for their buck.
That's what I'm saying.
So, I think they should start advertising, like, because they love to have 2 title fights, but then when they don't have 2 title fights, like, you end up having these huge fights like Nate Diaz versus Anthony Pettis. Like, that was only a 3-round fight on that card. But I'm pretty sure that was the co-main event to DC and the rematch there, and wouldn't everybody have wanted to see that in a 5-round fight? I think yes. So, and that one too. I mean, that wouldn't have been a number one contender fight, but it's still a featured bout. And I think that's what I was talking to somebody else about the other day. I think that goes into what you're saying though, is that they should start advertising the title eliminators actually as number one contender fights. So when the commentators should be talking about that, they should not be hiding the fact that it's a type that it's for the number one contender. That should be clearly stated, you know, because most times we know it is anyways. They should just say it, and then the fight is that much more exciting when you hear it during the broadcast. Also, the featured bouts, I think when you have a non-title fight as, you know, a co-main event and it's not a title eliminator, you know, those high-stakes fights should be featured bouts, and in those ones, I feel like should have, you know, could be 5 rounds, too. When you have just exciting fights, like how many people would have wanted to see when you had Robbie Lawler versus Cowboy, like, 3 years ago? Everybody said, how come this fight is only 3 rounds? Like, why do we want to see Lawler versus Cowboy in a 3-round fight? And it ended, and we all felt so underwhelmed. That's another one that should have been a featured bout. That should be 5 rounds. Like, that's just 2 examples off the top of my head, but there's so many fights that we all say, why is this 3 rounds? You know what I mean? So it's just that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I remember that fight because Lawler came out and he took it to Cowboy in the 1st round, and then Cowboy took it to him in the 2nd round, and then the 3rd round was really, really close. You could either one of them could have won the third round. Yeah, I remember that fight. That was a good fight. That's a good example, Keys. But I think the UFC, I think one of the reasons they won't do it, though, Evan, is because they don't want to pay people, man.
You have to
pay more for a five-round fight.
I hope so. I wonder. You think so?
And I think that's the reason why they won't do it is because they don't want to pay, bro.
No, you know what? You actually make a great point because you look at Bellator, some of their main event fights are only three rounds. A great deal of them are, actually. And that makes me wonder if they don't want to – Bellator's usually supposed to be better with pay is what they're trying to say, but then you got these three-round main events, which are ridiculous.
Has Bellator ever – have I ever seen – have they ever had five-round fights?
Oh, yeah, no, they got five-round fights. But, like, I feel like –
yeah, I think
MVP
– I'm pretty sure MVP and Lima was a five-round fight.
Yes, it was because it was in the it was in the tournament. So the tournament was the five – why it was five rounds. But if it wasn't in a tournament, I don't think it would have been five rounds, which
– okay.
I mean, I meant to say MVP and Daly. MVP and Daly,
yeah,
I think, was five rounds.
Five rounds.
Yeah. But the Lima fight was might have been five rounds, too.
I think it was.
But the
I see the UFC has as they don't want to pay fighters now, and they will have to pay them guys even more for five round fights. I just don't see them wanting to do it because they so cheap. Although they making so much money, it's just ridiculous. But that's a story for another day. What you got, Keys?
Now, so this is what I want to close out with tonight because I know it's going to take the necessary time. Now, Lee, we were talking about this last week, and I'm not going to go into all the details of what we were talking about last week because I'm still disgusted with the situation. And we were talking about McGregor and how I was disgusted about how I didn't get to see the season. And there was no season, and instead of the season, we saw a 40-second fight, and that was all we got, and there was no season. So between last week and this week, there's been a whole lot of tweets. McGregor put out a whole bunch of screenshots of apparently him talking to Dana White, DMs, you know, him saying, I want this fight and I want that. I'm not going to get into that because that's a whole lot of material, and we don't even have a whole show to talk about that, so we're just not going to talk about that. But you could go look at the files. I'm sure you guys already saw those pictures there. Like I said, I don't pay much mind to it because unless he's going to fight, I'm not reading all these tweets. But now, you know, it came out the other day that apparently, you know, I saw a poster for McGregor versus Pacquiao, and I was disgusted. I was disgusted at that poster. And I don't even want to watch that fight. And they said that it was supposed to be in winter 2020. They didn't say when. Then it came out today, and this is what I want to talk about, and it's the headline of our show, if you notice. This is the true fight, because I don't give a damn about watching McGregor box. I could give two – we don't even swear on this show. I could give a damn about watching McGregor box, and the true fight is McGregor-Poirier 2. And they came out with that, and McGregor said, how about we do this? You know, on Twitter, he said, how about we do a fight? You know, there's no weigh-ins, no weight rules or whatever for charity. And he was like, I'll donate. McGregor said to Poirier, I'll donate $500,000 towards your charity, towards Poirier's charity, the Good Fight Foundation, which I thought was dope. And then he said there'll be other charities involved on top of that, and the fight will be sponsored by McGregor Sports and Entertainment. It'll be completely separate from the UFC. So this is not a UFC-ranked bout. This is just a separate fight for charity they're going to do, and I think it's actually going to happen in Ireland. And today a poster came out for that fight, and at the bottom of it, and I don't know if it's Photoshop, maybe it is, but at the bottom of it you see you know, the stamps from the Good Fight Foundation and McGregor Sports and Entertainment. And it says the bout, it actually has a date. It says the bout will take place on December 12th. So to me, that's the fight that I'd rather see, because I don't care about seeing McGregor box. I've called for the rematch with him and Poirier for, you know, probably 2 years, maybe 3 years now. Everybody told me it would never happen. I think that's one of the best fights that could be made right now. I think the best fight that can be made for both guys. So I'm very happy about that. Now, A, do you guys think that the fight is legitimate and that it's actually booked? And two, what do you like the fight?
All right. I think the UFC will block it, being that both guys are under contract for the UFC. And if the UFC can't benefit from it, it's not going to happen. So it sounds like a good idea, you know, and all that good stuff. But if Dana White and the UFC aren't going to benefit from it, it's not going to happen. I think McGregor versus Pacquiao, that gained a lot of steam last week. But I think McGregor is making a big mistake fighting Manny if he fights Manny Pacquiao, because Manny Pacquiao is not going to do what Floyd Mayweather did. Floyd Mayweather kind of carried Conor for the early part of the fight, and then he turned it on. I don't see Pacquiao doing that. Pacquiao ain't that type of fighter. When he gets in the square circle, he's coming in there to win. And he's going to come in there and apply pressure to Conor like Conor has never seen, even in the UFC, in that boxing ring. So I think the McGregor-Pacquiao thing probably is more likely to happen than Poirier and Manny for charity. So we'll see what happens, man.
Now, Evan, if you want to give your take on that, go ahead. I actually just saw another headline that I want to read. So, Evan, feel free to say whether you like the fight or if you think it's legitimate. Not the Pacquiao fight. I don't care about the Pacquiao fight. We're talking about a true fight, MMA. So, the how with boxing. So, McGregor and Poirier, do you like it? And do you think the fight is legitimate or it's just a fan-made poster?
I think it's a fan-made poster. I think people are just really good at making posters. I've seen enough memes in the day. But if the fight was, like, genuinely legit for the UFC, I would hope so. I think it's a great fight. I think it can sell great numbers for the UFC, and I think that's why they need to, you know, stop just, you know, being silly. And hopefully just book that fight, because that's an easy main event right there. It's a rematch. McGregor needs that win to kind of get right back into that title contention. And then, you know, Poirier beats McGregor after he, you know, and gets that win, loss back. I mean, benefits are endless. So hopefully it's real in the sense for the UFC, because I've heard some things, but hopefully.
Okay, so I just read another headline right now while you were saying that. And I guess, okay, so this was September 30th. This was earlier today around noontime. It says Dana White, UFC has offered Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier a fight. Now, this actually reins in on what Lee was just saying, how the UFC wouldn't allow it to happen unless they could benefit from it. Now, this is kind of like a counter chess move to say you guys want to go ahead without us, but we're going to try to take over. We're going to book the fight for you guys. So that's kind of like on key with what Lee just predicted. So that's pretty much exactly predicted it. It said they had been offered a fight, and it said Dana White had said, oh, let me see right here. Okay. Conor called out Poirier for a fight with him in Dublin for charity, White said, in an interview with Barstool Sports. So we offered them both a fight. We offered Dustin and Conor a fight. So we're waiting to hear back from both of them. And then it said, shortly after White's comments were published online, Poirier posted, he had posted a tweet, and which I saw earlier, and he just said, quote, I accept. So who knows whether that's to, what that is to. Could be many things. But if that's true, then Lee, that was on par with what you predicted. You pretty much were right on key. The UFC is going to try to profit from it. Hopefully, if they have, you know, if they have the counter contract on the table, the counter offer, hopefully they offer Poirier the money he wanted for the Ferguson fight. Hopefully he'll get that now for the Conor fight, because that's what I would want for him. You know, I wouldn't want him to take a pay cut to get a bigger name, or take a pay cut to, you know, to be promised pay-per-view points or something stupid like that. You know, I hope that they actually give Poirier the money that he was requesting for the Ferguson fight, you know, the reason why that it fell through in the first place. And yeah, that's pretty much it. If the UFC wants to do it, that's fine with me, but I just hope they give Poirier his money. Lee, what do you think about that?
I think there's a more underlying story going on here that we probably need to bring up. I think Conor McGregor doesn't want to do business with the UFC anymore. When he put out the DM messages and stuff like that, to me, that was like he ain't set the house on fire, but he got matches in his hand. I think he don't want to do business with the UFC anymore, man. He wants to fight, but he just don't want to do the business part with the UFC, bro. That's why he's exploring other options as far as in the fight game. I could be wrong, but that's how I see it.
So you think that McGregor is saying, well, if you don't want to allow me to fight, then I'm just going to go ahead and book fights for myself?
Yep. But the one thing he got going against him is that he's under contract.
I mean, so do you think it's possible that he you know, he leaves that contract?
Man, I don't see the UFC releasing him from his contract, because if they release him from his contract, basically, I guarantee you Bellator would throw, they will probably get him part ownership. They would get him damn near everything under the sun to fire him. And I just don't see the UFC letting him, Conor, go that easily.
Yeah, that does kind of sound pretty way out in left field. Yeah, it does kind of sound a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll fight for charity. Maybe they'll fight under the UFC banner. Either way, I mean, I'll be happy with it. Like I said, as long as they give Dustin Poirier his just due with his fight purse. If they're gonna try to lowball him, then I'd rather him just say no to the fight and sit out until he gets what he deserves. Because to me, he's a top performer in the UFC. To me, he's a top five, debatably top three performer in all of the UFC. When you're talking about, you know, consistent fight of the night, consistent performance of the night, you know, consistent six, regardless if he's a champion, you know, if he's fighting 10 guy, he's always the best guys, and he always gets the biggest challenges and never gets away, you know, even if he loses. So I think he deserves to get the fight first that he asks that he's asking for. So as long as it gives him, you know, his pay, good with the fight, it takes place. And I think we'll close out with that, you know, a bit over time. It was definitely good. We got to talk about Adesanya. We talked about UFC 253. Having jump on, you know, we didn't get to talk too much about your boy Cannoneer and Whitaker. You know, you kind of missed that segment. You kind of missed the punch on that segment, but you know, we can always get into that more when the fight draws closer. You know, I'm sure we'll have a you know, it's likely we'll have a show the same week as that fight. So when we do our predictions, we can always go more in depth on that fight as it draws closer. Do you know what's the date for that fight? Anyways, do they have a date for that?
That is. Yep. Hold on, I got it right now. It is October. I think October, October 24th. And the interesting part about it is they're doing what they're doing for the time, since it's a pay-per-view. They're doing like what they did when Khabib fought Poirier, and the main card is going to start at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Wow. Okay.
Because I think they want to do it for like the Russian fans. I guess like the time difference is going to be too much.
Wait, so the main card is going to start at 2 p.m. in the afternoon? You know what, man? I'm probably actually going to try to tune into that. A lot of these cards, I don't want to. When it's on in the afternoon like that, or these cards are on at, 6 in the morning and noon and all these weird times, I'm always like, man, I am not moving to watch that card. But that card, I probably will. I'll probably have to get lunch, and I'll have to watch it over some lunch. That's just going to have to happen because I need to see that fight.
Oh, 100%.
Wasn't that fight,
man,
actually supposed to be on Evan? Wasn't that fight supposed to be on the Khabib and Gaethje card at first?
What fight?
Whittaker and Cannonier. Wasn't that supposed to be on the Khabib and Gaethje undercard?
That it is on. It is on the undercard. That's the co-main event of that fight.
Of that card.
It was supposed to be. Yeah, I think it was supposed to be earlier at some point. Like, they were supposed to, that fight was supposed to happen, but something happened within that, and now it's going to be for that card.
Oh, yeah, because they were supposed to get their own main event, and then now the UFC, tried to basically put together, a super card, because they have Islam Makhachev, I don't know how to say Islam. Islam, they got Islam over there and RDA. They got a lot of fights in that card. So they tried to make a super card.
That fight, that Whitaker Cannonier fight was supposed to be on the undercard for Izzy Romero and Zhang Joanna. That was when that fight was supposed to happen.
Oh, wow. Oh, and then he ended up fighting Joe instead. Wow, that fight traveled. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. They took, wow. Oh, so he ended up fighting Joe instead. Is that what happened?
Whitaker pulled out, and I think it had something to do with his daughter. I think, he donated bone marrow or something. And then he was out for a bit, and they gave him the Till fight, which, fun fight, and it worked out well. And now, Whitaker's got that win back, and now he gets to fight Jared.
Well,
yeah,
then,
man.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, Lee, close it out, man. I tried to close it out and I failed. You got to close this out, man. You got to do it.
Yo, man. Hey, very good discussion tonight, We definitely gave Izzy his props tonight. We definitely gave Jan his props tonight. Evan shocked me hit us with another shocker, saying Cannonier is going to destroy Whitaker. Although you did miss what I said, that Whitaker has become easily susceptible to counter punches due to him throwing wild and wide punches now. So we'll see how our predictions go the closer we get to that fight. Great times in the UFC here lately. If y'all hadn't known, I wrote an article this past week on Angela Hill. I think she's a star in the making. So if y'all could go out and check that out. It's great, man. It's great to be on the air. We told our listeners last week that we're going to definitely try to do more shows at least once a week. With that being said, everybody have a nice evening. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks, Evan, for being part of the show once again. Everybody have a great day, a great week, and stay positive and stay safe. That being said, close it out as always. Live, love, laugh. Live your life to the fullest. Tell somebody you love them. and have one good laugh every day. And as always, in closing, peace!